In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.
Here come the drums.
C-R-I-M-E-W-A-V. You're rolling with the Crime Wave, the internet's first and only podcast devoted to the crime short story. I'm Seth Harwood, your host, the first name in crime podcast fiction, and I'm ready to bring you this week's story. The Crime Wave is produced by Mystery Dog, Aldo Calcagno, and it is not safe for your minivans. That means it might contain swearing, violence, and all types of shit. Welcome to the Crime Wave, peoples. We have got two stories for you this week. They're both short, so we're putting them together. The first one is by Dave White, my label mate at Three Rivers Press. He's got two books out, When One Man Dies and The Evil That Men Do. This story is called Limp Puppets.
Limp Puppets by Dave White. Originally published by Shots Magazine, UK. Tonight reminded me of the night Reggie died, the kind of night where the sky is clear, the roads are dry, and nothing is supposed to happen. Those are the nights everything always goes to hell, aren't they? God, even the first light we hit, two kids started to cross the street while the light was only yellow. I slammed on the brakes and stopped just short of the crosswalk. One kid was ballsy, flipped me off. His buddy laughed, and they continued across the street. "Who crosses on yellow?" Rebecca asked, like she'd been reading my mind. She paused, as if something struck her. "You know, you never told me what happened that night." "What night?" "Reggie." That was, what, 10, 15 years ago? Something like that. I was in 6th grade, so 12 years. You guys were freshmen, right? She adjusted the strap of her black dress with her left hand. She shook her head and brown bangs fell over her eyes. After adjusting the dress a little more, she brushed the hair out of the way. Finally, she made sure her seatbelt was tight enough, tugged on it just a little. "Comfortable?" She smiled. "Yeah." The light turned again, and I gasped the engine. "Anyway," I said, "that thing with Reggie was a long time ago. By the time I met you, it was already ancient history." "Yeah, but..." "No buts. Ancient history. You watched your friend die. That affects you. If we're serious about each other..." She trailed off, looked out the window. "What?" I said. "I think it's just a part of your past, and I should know about it." I hit the radio, flipped the channels, trying to find something she could sing along with. Settled on Liz Phair. Rebecca didn't sing. "It's like you were doing good until then. Your mom showed me the old scrapbook, remember? Had your old report cards in it, good grades, good comments from teachers. Then it all just stopped." That familiar sensation started to kick in. I felt it well up inside, and I had to push it back down. "Now," she kept going, "you work at your dad's pharmacy. You didn't go to college. You didn't get a real job. You stock shelves. It had to affect you." "Jesus, Rebecca, why don't you just pick at all my flaws?" I was driving faster now. I couldn't slow down if I tried. "It helps if you talk about it, that's all." Rebecca was looking at me now, not out the window, one hand on her knee, the other hooked into her seatbelt, like she was intent on listening to me. I took a deep breath and waited to see if she would look away. She didn't. She wouldn't let it go. It wasn't the time to deal with this. It was never going to be the time, but she wasn't going to let it go. I took a deep breath. "You really want to know?" She nodded. I told the story so many times 12 years ago. It became second nature. To the police, to my family, to Reggie's parents. It was natural now. It just came out. "We went to Burger King after football practice. The one on 46? Just wanted to grab a bite to eat. Reggie's parents weren't home, so he had to take care of himself for dinner. We ate, hung out for a little while. When we left, we had to cross the highway to get back to his house. We waited at the light, you know? Pressed the crosswalk button and waited. The light turned yellow. And like those kids back there, Reggie just started to walk. We thought traffic would stop. It always did. I was a second slow, but Reggie wasn't. He stepped into traffic. There was a lady in a... God, what was it? It was like a blue LeBaron. She didn't slow down. She just tore through that yellow light. I was still on the corner, and Reggie, he didn't even have time to flinch. The car hit him, and he flipped up in the air right over the top of the car, like it was some movie. Man, he must have been dead before he hit the ground. Felt the same way now as I did that night. The tightness in the pit of my stomach, the strange sense of curiosity awakened again. "Oh my God," Rebecca said. She took her hand off the seatbelt, put it on my thigh. It was something I'd been able to bury for so long. "Did you ever get help? Did you ever talk to anyone about it? A psychologist or something?" she asked. I always thought it was a healthy feeling, even scientific, wanting to know what happens to something. Experimental. Pull the wings off flies. Set a beehive on fire. Skin a cat. "Did you, Greg?" There was something else I was always curious about, wanted to experiment with. I reached down and clicked her seatbelt loose. "What's it like when someone dies?" "What are you doing?" Rebecca asked. Her hand came off my thigh. I slammed on the brakes. My belt locked. Rebecca went forward. The windshield shattered. I could hear the crack of the glass, the screech of my brakes. Felt momentum pull at my body. Felt the cool night air on my face. Everything was in slow motion. The way her body moved, floated in midair. It rolled once, twice, before feeling the pull of gravity, exactly like Reggie did. Women didn't react differently to physics than men. The body snapped and twisted like limp puppets tossed toward a trash can. I felt a sense of satisfaction as she hit the ground. I didn't feel curious anymore, like 12 years ago, when I pushed Reggie out into the highway. You know, just to see what happens.
Yeah, that one was pretty short, so we didn't want to leave you with just one this week. We're bringing out to you, this is the first time that this guy's ever had a story published anywhere. And he's excited about it, and we're pretty excited about it. His name is Drew Gardner, and this story is called The Good Soldier.
I learned very quickly from the old veterans that if you truly wanted to make a difference in this street war, you'd have to think and act like a criminal. It wasn't hard for me to do. In fact, I thrived in the criminal environment. I think that's why I was promoted. Well, I know that's why I was eventually promoted to sergeant and in charge of narcotics. I never had a conscience, and I always did what needed to be done. I gave my supervisors results. As detective, I was closing cases out that would have never been closed by the Boy Scout detective. Why? Because the Boy Scout would never break or bend the rules to suit his needs. I, on the other hand, well, I'd do whatever needed to be done, while covering my tracks at the same time. I became pretty effective at my job, and as time went on, I learned more and more. I was taught by the old-school veterans, and one lesson I learned quickly was the phone book. The book wouldn't bruise the human body like a physical punch to the face would. But the best technique I learned was starving them out in jail for a few days until they gave it all up. This was a hands-off approach and very, very incorrigible. I was open to the older guys teaching me, and once they saw me work, I was accepted as one of the new up-and-coming right-hand men in the department. I was detective at 27 years old and one of the youngest in the position. I knew my place within the department, which means even though your badge didn't say lieutenant or sergeant, you always gave respect to the old vets. You paid respect to them, because if you didn't, they'd eat you alive. I've seen it time and time again. Rookies with big egos who think the old patrolman isn't shit. They fail to realize that the old man was hired at the same time as the captain and the lieutenant, and they're good friends. The rookie also fails to realize that maybe, just maybe, that old man was somebody at one point in time, but he got caught slipping, and his penance is to be on patrol till the end. The administration loved me, because I wouldn't ask questions. I just did what was asked of me, like a good soldier. I recall being pulled to the side after a briefing during my early years when I was working patrol. They told me they wanted me to find and arrest Johnny Ray for any reason. Johnny was a mid-level meth dealer who was always causing some kind of drama in the city, but for one reason or another, he'd always skate on the charges. The department even hit his home with a search warrant. He was arrested, of course, but again, he posted bail. Johnny was right back at it, doing business as usual. To this day, I believe I was being tested to see if I would complete the task set before me, or just stand idle. Well, of course I was going to complete the task, and then some. A few days later, I'm working on my regular graveyard shift. The night's been steady with the crazy calls, and it's only midnight. I'm on my way to a mini-mart to get some coffee because it's raining and it's cold as hell. I'm about to pull into the parking lot, and who do I see? Good old Johnny. Johnny happens to be pulling out of the parking lot as I'm pulling in. He's driving some pimpmobile, a newer-end Cadillac CTS with 20-inch rims. We make eye contact as we cross paths, and I think he knew I was going to go after him because he floored it and left the parking lot breaking rubber in his caddy. Fuck. By the time I flipped a U-turn, he had a city block lead on me. I start the lights and the siren, and the chase was on. I was hitting speeds of 100 miles an hour on a wet street. You immediately feel the adrenaline rush, and your body feels rigid and tight. My mouth goes dry as I'm calling this into dispatch. Unlike the movie chases, you as the cop are shitting bricks, not because of your driving abilities, but because of idiot drivers. People will pull out in front of you or won't stop at the intersection because they have a green light. They don't realize that at high speeds you can't stop on a dime. The last thing I want to do is kill myself or some idiot who has nothing to do with the pursuit. Dispatch tells me a few minutes later that there are no other units available to assist me. I don't care. I continue on anyways. I'm going to nail this son of a bitch and earn my stripes. The streets are empty because of the time of night and the weather. Johnny takes me from the downtown area into the residential. And I'm thinking he's going to ditch the car and run on me. I'm making these turns at 40 miles an hour, and man, I'm pushing it. The car fishtails a few times, but I'm able to keep it under control. I'm just waiting for Johnny to wreck into something. He's driving like a bat out of hell. I'm just gambling that my driving abilities are better, because I know that I'm so far out of departmental policy that if I wreck, I'm going to either get fired or get a suspension. And neither is an option. I learned early on that if you want to move up the ranks, you have to roll by the skin of your teeth and gamble, and the stakes are your career. If you win, the prize is being known as a made man, a cop's cop, an individual who's proven himself in the trenches and can make the big calls. If you're considered a made man, then you run your own crew of cops. When you run your own crew, well, the sky's the limit, as long as you can cover your tracks well. I knew these cops, and I knew the power and wealth that came with it. I also knew the Boy Scouts, who were barely making it, living paycheck to paycheck. Boy Scout played by the rules and had a hard time making his mortgage payment and putting cases on criminals. The other type of cop had the fear and respect from his fellow officers and the criminal. I would sometimes see a Boy Scout try and snitch out a made man, and that wouldn't go too well. The department didn't want to know about any type of misconduct, because that would just open them up to a lawsuit. The made guys would also be angry that somebody was trying to snitch them out from within. Needless to say, the snitch bitch wouldn't last long, because nobody's perfect, and the moment you start to slip up on the job, the administration would fire your ass. Johnny takes the chase outside the city limits and into the county jurisdiction. He's flying in his caddy, and for whatever reason, he slams on the brakes in a pitch-black area. Jumps out of the car, and now he's running on foot through a park, and I can't get the patrol car in because of the cyclone fence. I ditch my car, and now I'm running after him. Johnny has a thin, wiry build and stands well over 6 feet tall, but all the crack smoking doesn't help him out much. I was able to catch up to him, and I'm breathing heavily and tired after running for 2 city blocks with 80 pounds of gear on. The adrenaline is pumping in me, and I'm feeling like the Incredible Hulk full of rage. Johnny was stupid enough to allow himself to get cornered in a dark alley with no witnesses around. I have enough common sense to look around for any cameras or witnesses out of habit, but who am I kidding? It's like 1 a.m., and who's going to be walking an alley this late? I'm thinking, okay, now is my time to put in my work. I was never into using my equipment on criminals. Well, with the exception of the taser. I've always loved fist fighting. It's much more satisfying, and it allows your anger to exit your body in a pleasing manner. I roll up on him and buckle him over with a right cross to the face, and as he's going down, a swift boot to the chest. Johnny grabs my left leg and takes me down to the wet, dirty alleyway. He tries to get on top of me, but this doesn't work for him. I'm able to push him off with my legs, and Johnny begins to get up off the ground. He now decided he was going to run on me again. I get up off the ground and tackle him from behind. We both go back down to the ground. This time I'm on top of him and I'm breathing fire. Now let's see how much good old-fashioned punishment he can take before passing out. I go to town on him for a few minutes before the little bitch begins to beg. I cuff him up and I notice he was knocked out. I'm not about to carry him back to the patrol car, so I drag him by his shirt. This was straight caveman style, and it allowed me a few minutes to breathe the fire out of my lungs. By the time I reach my car, Johnny's coming too. He begins to run his mouth about his rights, and man, did he piss me off. How dare he? His rights. What about the rights of the kids he poisons? What about the rights of the people who are now dead because of his shit? And what about the families who've suffered? I snap, and I pick him off the ground, and I slam his head into the back window of my car, causing the window to break. He now goes limp because he gets knocked out again. I'm so pissed, I throw him in the back of my car like a rag doll. The other cops are on scene shortly after, and as I'm searching Johnny's car, I find a half pound of crystal methamphetamines. This was the reason the shitbird was running. Johnny gets charged for possession for sales, and my superiors are pleased with the ass-whipping. But in the next few days, the case gets pled down to a regular possession of methamphetamines. I'm approached and asked to watch Johnny and nail him the first chance I get. I know that if Johnny gets busted for sales again within 7 days of getting out, the district attorney's office will have to do something about this guy. I'm on patrol days later around 3 a.m. when I notice a gold Chevy Tahoe driving around neighborhoods without any lights on. First thing that comes to my mind was drive-by shooting vehicle. I call it into dispatch and stop the Tahoe. Upon approaching the vehicle from the passenger side, I recognize the driver as Johnny. I smile and I greet him, and I also notice he has three other frogs with him. I'm crazy, but I'm not stupid, so I call in for backup. I bullshit Johnny and ask him for the vehicle keys, and he gives them to me, but not without him calling me every name in the book. He thinks he's dealing with a Boy Scout, and boy, is he wrong. I'm gonna fuck him. He just doesn't know it yet. I walk back to the rear of my patrol car thinking, spinning ideas of how I'm going to handle the situation, thinking of how I'm going to deal Johnny a devastating blow to his life. My backup arrives shortly after, and I tell him to stand back and just watch my back. I first had Johnny's three goons step out of the Tahoe, and I walk him about 30 feet away and out of sight. I shake him down and find all three of them in possession of meth. Turns out each one of these guys had three baggies of methamphetamines. I had my plan formulated in my head now, and I tell the three goons it's their lucky day. I tell them I'm keeping the meth for them and to beat feet, or I'll take them in. These guys aren't my targets, and I don't need to be bogged down with the extra bullshit. The three goons run off in the darkness, and now I tell my backup that I have it all under control and they can all leave except for Officer London. Officer Michael London, the traditional good guy cop, Boy Scout with a twist. This guy wanted to win the war, but wasn't willing to put in the dirty work. At the same time, he would never snitch, and he witnesses a lot of evil deeds that need to be done. This is why London was okay, and was accepted by the big players in the department. He knew to keep his mouth shut about certain things, regardless of what his personal feelings were. I worked with London for almost a decade, and towards the end of the game, he asked me how I could live with myself, knowing what I did. My response to him was easy. Told them I believed I was doing the Lord's work by ushering the trash a bit quicker to their final destination. Prison. We never had that conversation again, and we parted ways. London was one of my best friends, and I still miss that friendship. It's hard to walk away, but it needed to be done. I told Officer London that Johnny was going to be arrested for the sales of methamphetamines. London didn't say anything and just stood back and let me operate. I walked over to the driver's side door of the Tahoe and opened it. I tell Johnny to step out, and he begins to run his mouth. I whisper in his ear that if he doesn't shut his mouth, I'm going to push his face through the pavement. He shuts up. I put him in the back of my car, while I search his Tahoe without his consent, of course. I find nothing, and I see the shitbird smiling in the back of my car. This fuckhead still doesn't get it. He still thinks I play by the rulebook. Man, is he going to get a rude awakening. I needed to make an example of Johnny and break him, so I can make my stripes in the department. I have Johnny step out of my car, and I tell him to put his hands behind his back. He wants to know why, and I tell him to do it or else. He does as he's told, and I tell him he's under arrest for the sale of methamphetamines. He begins to argue that he didn't have any drugs, and I show him the nine baggies of crystal meth I have in my left hand. While he's arguing with me, I tell him these baggies have his name on them. Johnny began to yell that he was being set up. I laugh at him and tell him and go and tell somebody and see who's going to listen. I mean, I'm the good guy and he's the bad guy. Within a few days, I get some pats on the back for the arrest and for doing what needed to be done. Johnny also gets what was coming to him. Time in prison.
Thank you for listening to The Crime Wave. I'm your host, Seth Harwood. I hope you'll check out the rest of the stories here on Crime Wave and tell your friends about it. It's the CRIMEWAV. Help pass the word, register at our site so that you can participate in the forums and add comments to the episodes. You can email us with questions or comments at info@crimewave.com. Aldo, the mystery dog, and I will get your email and we'll get back to you right quick. You can also call the K7 line, 206-350-4998, to leave comments or feedback. And if you leave a great message, we'll even play it at the end of a show. So drop a line, hop on the website, visit often, spread the word, and thank you for stopping by the Crime Wave.
In fact, it's a crime. It's a crime.